You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for February 21st, 2014. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside, my Sharia. It's the Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Let's sing that together, shall we?
Sure.
Do 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 my Sharia.
We really should sing it in the same room because I'm not sure which refrain we're on. But yeah, Sharia comes to Arizona. Who knew? You know, this was predicted long ago by Patty, what's her name? Pammy Atlas. And Newt Gingrich. Yeah. You know, such prophets of the 21st century as Newt Gingrich. Sharia would come to America. But who could have predicted the Republicans would deliver Sharia law to America? Nobody. Well, probably Robert Heinlein. But other than that, nobody could have predicted. And yet, Arizona State, the Senate on Wednesday passed a bill backed by Republicans that would expand the rights of people to assert their religious beliefs in refusing service to gays and others.
Yeah.
Essentially, I can do whatever the hell I want to you in my to discriminate against you.
As long as I call myself a Christian, I'm allowed.
As long as it's my religion. It doesn't say Christian. It says religion. So, guess what my religion is?
Yeah. Flying spaghetti monster.
Yeah, well, whatever you want. Whatever you want. Go ahead and try to take that to the Supreme Court and have them decide what's religion, what's not.
My religion is the anti-Arizonan thing. I have to discriminate against Arizonans.
Yeah.
Not all Arizonans are this bad, by
no,
the way.
No, we know and love
people. We get letters from people that are wonderful from Arizona.
I have family in Arizona.
Honest to God. People. Yeah, you do.
I got email from
your dear sister who knits, for God's sake.
Yeah.
And
delightful
she's had
people.
Health problems this week. Happy birthday to her.
Happy birthday,
to your sister. And I'm going to send you yarn as soon as your life settles down. Your mother told me not to send it right now because you're sick and you're moving and life
you're handling
extraordinarily complicated. And we understand that. And we're thinking about you, darling. And there you go. She's an awesome sister-in-law, too.
She is.
She's awesome.
She is I'm extremely envious of the amount of things she can do simultaneously and well. It's kind of disturbing.
He's a better knitter than I am. So I'm not going to talk about that too much. Okay. We have a letter that I would like to start with because it mentions it's not from Arizona. It's from New Mexico right next door.
Okay. And by the way, we're doing trying to do an overarching theme on the show this week.
Yeah. A flyover country.
Flyover liberals, flyover country,
liberals.
That's where we live.
Many of our listeners are in flyover country and red states in flyover country. And so many of our contributors are like us in flyover country. And you had a commenter.
I've had several comments.
Just said, look, I'm in the Beltway or I'm in the East
Coast. I'm in New York. I'm on the East Coast. And it's a statement of fact. And I think he's being deliberately obnoxious.
Yeah.
But knowing people from that area, he might just be stating, you know, that just might be his natural inside voice. I don't know. But it basically is, fuck you. We live, if you're not on the coast, you don't exist.
Yep.
And you can yap
want. He's trying to get you to stop complaining about not getting Charlie Pierce attention.
No. Well, he might be, I don't mention that anymore. Not much. But I do like sort of light out after David Gregory and light out after people I think are the worst problem in politics. And we'll talk a little bit about why that's simply unarguably true. And you shouldn't even try to persuade me otherwise. But the subtext is their broadcasts have nothing to do with you.
Yeah.
Nothing. Meet the Press has nothing to do with you. Their audience is New York, Washington, L.A. Period.
And
if
their perspective is New York, Washington, L.A. And they don't care about other perspectives.
And they just don't acknowledge they exist. So when Rachel Maddow last night, for example, talked about South Carolina and coal slurry and the poisoning of the water supply and just the horrendous ecological damage being wrought by a government that is wholly owned by private enterprise that is elected by the good people of South Carolina.
Yep.
They're just feeding their own people poison. She just was like, why can't the Beltway get interested in this story? And the answer is because it didn't happen in New York, honey.
Yeah.
It didn't happen in Washington, D.C. I didn't mean that in a diminutive, dismissive way. But
no, but half an inch of snow in Washington, D.C.
is the end of the world.
Is 12 times more important than 100 feet of snow anywhere else. Right.
And Chris Christie is 100 times more important than Rod Blagojevich.
Right. Right.
Because New Jersey. So it's a simple matter of fact that despite the fact that there are plenty of liberals out here, we vote, we're active, we're parents, we take care of our communities.
We're Americans. We're American citizens.
Now, the fact of the matter is that our Beltway media, and to a large extent our liberal media, our sort of institutional liberal media, pays no attention whatsoever to anything that goes on outside of the bubble other than to tell a funny story about hillbillies who are eating poison because their government hates them.
Yeah.
And that's
and as a side to that, I did a little research about fracking in North Carolina and found, to my horror, that if you just Google fracking regulation map.
Yeah.
And look at the map there are maps out there based on what does a fracking company have to do, and they shade the states based on what's pending and what isn't, and what do fracking companies have to do to frack. There is this hole of zero regulation on frackers.
Yes.
I mean zero. They don't have to tell you that they are fracking.
Yeah. Or what they're putting in the ground.
Or the chemicals they're using, anything. But they don't have to tell you anything in North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, and Florida.
Yeah.
Zero regulation on fracking.
Yep.
Somebody can own a property, drill a fracking well, horizontally frack under other people's property, anything they want to do, and not tell anybody anything about it. In the Carolinas, Georgia, and Florida. It's just this whole...
And they can be guaranteed of only one thing, that eventually David Brooks will go on Meet the Press and talk about how safe fracking is. And so that everyone in the Beltway will go, oh, well, that's great.
This is the new energy, clean energy revolution. Yes.
And one more little flyover touch, and then we'll go on to our letter, which is very important. Chuck Todd, on that horrendous fake climate change debate staged for, again, the Beltway goofs, David Gregory put on a flat earth Republican denialist, Marsha Blackburn, and Bill Nye, the science guy, to debate climate change as if there's a debate. And he, of course, that's what the Sunday shows are now. It's puppet theater for the ruling class. They don't care about us. They're not interested in our opinions. They don't respond to us. No matter how much we yell and scream, unless it's an Iraq war situation where their personal world is coming crumbling under them, then they get interested in the outside world. But this is just puppet theater. So Chuck Todd, my man Chuck Todd, as Charlie Pierce calls him, his solution was quit debating this. Quit having these debates. This is just political. This is just making people angry. And essentially, who cares who's right and who's wrong? Let's just build better seawalls.
Mm-hmm.
Because, hey, my wine cellar might get flooded. Yeah. This might actually affect me. So let's build some big ass. Let's get the federal government to build some big ass seawalls.
The taxpayers, not me and not my insurance company. And flood insurance will be provided for by the taxpayer because I want to live near the beach.
And that will take care of my immediate problem, which is I don't want to admit liberals are right, which makes me very uncomfortable and will cause me to lose my job. And I don't want to be inconvenienced by the shit that the Republicans are doing. So build me a bigger wall.
I'm not making that excuse for average Americans who live in New York City and so places that were flooded during Sandy. That's not my point.
No.
But these people who actually have a voice in the public dialogue about climate change
can set the agenda, can set the debate,
are setting the agenda and then reaping the benefits when it comes to, no, I want to live on Long Island in a mansion.
Yeah.
So I'm going to sue my insurance company to make sure I get. And that's what they did in Louisiana. The senator from Louisiana. What was his name again?
Trent Lott.
Oh, you're good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Trent Lott was all about tort reform until his property got flooded.
Yes. And then he hired, ha ha ha, here's the punchline.
Yeah.
Trent Lott was all about tort reform and all that litigiousness that's destroying America because blah, blah, blah. Right up until literally his house was, his porch was destroyed by a hurricane.
Yep.
At which point the insurance company told him to go screw himself.
Mm-hmm.
At which point he sued. But who did he hire?
I don't know.
The best anti-tobacco lawyer he could get his hands on. Because those guys never stop. As long as you have enough money to pay for lawyers. But it was clear. And you know what? this isn't the Science Fiction University portion of our show, but there is a story about when the rich built walls so high that no one could get in to keep out the horrors of the outside world. And it was called the Mask of the Red Death.
Yeah.
So congratulations, Chuck Todd. We're coming for you, man. The hour is tolling. Midnight cometh soon. So get ready, Chuck Todd. Get ready.
We need to have that Pitchforks and Torches podcast sometime this year.
Yeah, we do.
And,
yeah.
talk about both Mask of the Red Death and also Tale of Two Cities. And
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Let's do that. Yeah. Let's do that. Let's put that on the list.
All right. So let's read
sometime
that letter.
This summer when it's a slow news week. Dear Driftglass and Blue Gal, this is from Andy in Albuquerque.
Hey, Andy.
Hi, Andy. We love you. I was in the grocery store yesterday and a random lady walked up to me and insisted that I take this money to help pay for my groceries. I have no idea why she singled me out, a young man with no kids in tow or other outward signs of needing assistance. I tried to refuse, but she wouldn't hear it. So rather than continue to argue, I decided to graciously accept and pay it forward to my favorite progressive podcast purveyors.
Aww.
I hope it lifts your spirits as it did mine. Oh, thank you, Andy.
Thank you, Andy.
On a personal note, I grew up in what is now Tim Huelskamp's Camp's Big First District of Western Kansas.
Uh-huh.
And my parents still live in Bob Dole's hometown of Russell, Kansas.
Yep.
I was there for Christmas and made the mistake of opening the local newspaper.
Don't do it, man.
Don't do it, man. Don't do it.
Sports and funnies, man.
What was billed as a, quote, editorial. Oh, God, I know where this is going. You do, too.
Yep.
Was actually a 1,000-plus word Gish Gallop-style screed. Can you explain Gish Gallop to us?
Gish Gallop-style is, I can't think of the guy's name. His name is Gish, obviously. But it's a style of debating, quote-unquote debating, creationists and fact-free science, where that you just bombard someone with some things that are true, a lot of half-truths, and a lot of lies. You say it in a confident voice, but you just overwhelm someone. You bury them with bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And you just keep at it. You just keep rolling at them and rolling at them with facts that you just make up on the spot, or they're half-true, or they're deflective. And the aggregate effect of that is to just destroy. And this is a core issue that we also need to talk about in the future.
Mm-hmm.
It's not to debate the person. It's to destroy the ability to have a debate at all.
The GOP is very good at this. They're trained in this. So this editorial was a Gish Gallop style screed containing the usual lies about Obamacare, the IRS, Benghazi,
Benghazi.
And everything, quote, the liberals, end quote, are trying to do to this country. It made me sick to my stomach that this is what the people of my homeland are force-fed on a daily basis, with no real alternative in terms of pervasiveness. It only got worse when I made my second mistake of viewing Huelskamp's State of the Union Twitter feed.
Oh, good.
And reading about his insane interview with Rachel Maddow afterwards.
Yeah.
The histrionics about tyranny through executive orders.
Yeah.
The smug condescension with which he declares climate change a hoax because he just knows it is.
Uh-huh.
It's just too much. Of course, he can say anything and never has to answer to anyone because he'll sail to re-election with little or no opposition. I'd never been more ashamed to hail from the Great Plains of the First District.
Yeah.
As you also live in the heartland, I'm sure you can relate. There are good people in Western Kansas.
Yeah.
While generally Republican, they used to elect a wide variety of politicians who at least believed in governing.
Yep.
When I was in high school in the 90s, both my state senator and state representative were Democratic women. That has all changed in the past 20 or so years. I don't want to write them off, however. As so many progressives from the coasts seem to. They're my people. And I get so frustrated that there's seemingly nothing that can convince them they're voting against their own interests. And that both the Democratic establishment and many progressives write off flyover country as full of backward bigots unworthy of any money or attention. In my opinion, that's not how we move this country forward. Kansas has a great Democratic candidate for governor in Paul Davis, and polls indicate he actually has a chance of winning. But I'm sure he'll get no help from outside as opposed to Brownback.
Uh-huh.
And I am fairly confident that Koch money will lift Brownback to an easy reelection. It's disgusting. Anyway, I wish your podcast could be required listening across the Big First District. Thanks for all you do, and best wishes for a great 2014. Andy. Thank you, Andy. And I know that Lawrence O'Donnell had a rage about Priorities USA.
Yeah.
Abandoning the midterms.
Yeah. Just kicking. You know,
whatever happened to that 50-state strategy?
Well, anyway, that was Howard Dean's strategy.
Aren't we tired of Howard Dean being right about everything?
And Howard Dean was pushed aside by the now mayor of Chicago, yeah, who went on to become the chief of staff for the president of the United States, yeah, Rahm Emanuel. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that approach of keep constricting, keep fighting from positions of strength, and that approach is what's wrecking has broken the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. And There is in physics. I'm not a physicist. I don't even play one anywhere. But in physics, there is outside of a black hole, there's a thing called the event horizon.
Mm.
The event horizon is the point beyond which you can never get out.
Yeah, right.
And you can cross it if it's a large black hole. You can cross it without ever really noticing.
Mm.
It's not like you're destroyed at that point. Mm-hmm. But that's the point at which
gravity takes over, right?
Well, gravity takes over, and if you turn your ship around, the amount you'd have to travel faster than light to escape the black hole.
I see. Yeah.
And you can't do it.
You can't do it, right?
So you're stuck. You might get sucked down for years,
mm-hmm,
and it looks normal as far as the universe is concerned. You see the stars. There's nothing has changed as far as you can tell. But to the outside world, you have disappeared. Mm-hmm. You're gone. You can never ever come back. And there is a point in ideology, in fanaticism, where you cross an event horizon. And you could never come back. One of the themes of The Walking Dead is we can come back from this. We can come back. We can start our lives over. We can save this. And of course, they can't.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying that as a culture or as a country or as a civilization, we've crossed an event horizon. But there are people out there for whom admitting that they got it wrong would so completely annihilate their identity.
Yeah.
That they can't do it. So they will seek out more and more crazy people to tell them that they were right all along. And, mm-hmm, and they will fall for anything. Mm-hmm. And that's the Republican Party. That's, yeah, that's them by design. It's that way on purpose. That's the way they were built to be. And now the fight is at the very top of the party over which demagogue gets to fly the drone.
Yeah. You know, that's what I find fascinating about this is the dichotomy of the Republican Party leadership fighting over the microphone, right?
Yeah.
Who speaks for the party? And as Joe Biden said, there's no Republican Party anymore. It's just moneyed interests. And so who's going to speak for those moneyed interests is the question.
Well,
on the flip side of that, though, Driftglass,
uh-huh,
is human beings, citizens, fighting for clean drinking water.
Yes.
Fighting for clean air.
Yeah.
And the law... I mean, this is where I get back to how do we talk to our neighbors? The law is not on the side of people having a right to clean drinking water.
Nope, not anymore. Nope.
Not anymore.
Nope.
And it used to be that the law was what the average citizen had, was recourse to the law to protect themselves and their families and keep them safe from bad air, bad food, bad water, whatever. You had the protection of the courts to be able to go and sue to get them to regulate the water that was coming into your house. The law is against the people of West Virginia. It's against the voters of North Carolina.
Yeah.
It's against black men in Florida taking a walk, for God's sake.
Yep. Yep.
And, you know, Republicans used to be law and order, the law and order party.
Yeah. Well, that was never really true. But, beat up the hippies
beat
and
up
lock
hippies
people away
law
forever.
Order. That was a code word for beat up the hippies.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And lock them up and throw away the key. Yeah. They were the punishment party. If you
yep.
just
and
kick
they still
people
are.
Apart,
they
yeah,
still
exactly.
are the punishment party. It's yeah. just we're going to punish the poor. But I think when you're talking with your neighbors in a bar about this, it's like, what happened to the law? And do you personally, if you're talking to a Republican, and very often you're not talking to someone who's going to admit that, I think.
Yes.
But do you approve of how citizens are treated by the law once the Republicans get into power?
Uh-huh. Are you okay with
people being stopped from voting? Are you okay with someone not being able to take a walk in their neighborhood without getting shot? Are you okay with people in this country, middle-class citizens,
uh-huh,
being able to light their faucet on fire because a corporation said, yeah, we fuck you, we get to do that?
Yeah.
And
are you okay with that?
Are you okay with that? And if you are, then yes, you're a Republican.
Well, yeah, but
freedom.
And there is a sense. I mean, this is really again, I hate to loop back to Charlie Pierce.
Go ahead and loop back to Charlie.
But he pointed out that a century ago in Ludlow, Colorado, people fought and died for your right to organize a union.
As workers, yeah.
And today, in the great state of Tennessee, the workers voluntarily, not all of them, but a majority of them voluntarily, without a gun being put to their head, without anybody threatening their family, without anybody having to die, voluntarily voted to cut their own throats because freedom.
Let's read B's letter while we're talking about this subject.
Think about this theme as you listen to it, which is Charlie Pierce's message was, you got to stop blaming other people. It's us.
I mean, in a
very broad sense, this is our country. But the reason the people of South Carolina are being poisoned is because they elected people who let that happen, who put that
in. And who said freedom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They are.
That means jobs, and that means money in your pocket. So, and cheap gas. And, so go for that. Oh, I'm going to vote for that because I don't want gas to be $6 a gallon. Right.
And the catch and the trap door in that argument or that discussion you're having with your, you know, imaginary, but in my case, often real colleague or conservative friend or whatnot at the bar or wherever, the trap door out of which they always escape. Liberals are worse.
Yeah,
but liberals are worse. Yeah, but Democrats.
Think about what your taxes would be if you let the liberals take over.
Exactly. They always have that excuse that no matter how bad they're being abused at home, they can never get a divorce. They can never leave because out there in the real world, it's so much worse. And that's the point at which you say, yeah, but that's a lie too. Have you noticed that the same person who's been telling you that it's okay to poison your water and poison your air and rip you off and give money to bankers and basically fuck you over? Those are the same people who've been telling you that liberals are awful. Why do you believe them at all?
About that, yeah.
Why do you believe them about that?
Well, because both sides are equally bad.
Well, because the alternative that I have been a chump for my entire adult life, I've been played for a chump, that I am actually participating in the destruction of my own country, that every word I have said is false, everyone I've trusted has lied to me and pissed in my face and laughed about it, is so horrifying. The realization that I've been that fucking wrong for so long is so horrifying that I will gladly keep eating their poison as long as I don't have to face that realization.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, let's proceed with that.
Yeah, V's letter. And
our letter.
V is a frequent correspondent with me. He is retired outside of the United States. And he writes all the time, both snail mail letters and also emails. And he emailed us this week and said, I give up. The Volkswagen United Auto Workers vote finally did me in. I suppose my perspective has been affected by living outside the U.S. for 5 years, but really, I can't help but put this defeat down to the general dumbing down of any resemblance to critical thinking in the United States and the incompetence of the union movement in the United States to get really serious about organizing.
Yep.
The militants of all stripes seem to have been stricken with middle-class laziness and comfort. The mistake the organized labor movement, and then he put sick, meaning organized, really, SIC, organized, in the U.S. makes, is that individual unions concentrate on their parochial, self-interested approaches to organizing. Instead of organizing for all workers, see, for instance, the French labor movement model, and their benefit, the fragmented organizing methods of the U.S. labor movement concentrate too much on the needs of their constituents rather than all workers. Hate to say it, but some folks may have to lose their lives if we want to conquer unregulated capitalism. I give up. I just wish I could get 20 more years on the planet to agitate for the revolution necessary to award a level of bien-être, good well-being, back to the middle class that it deserves. Provide the worker with a lifetime of well-being, and that makes the whole of society benefit. That is when all boats will rise, from the bottom up. By the way, my creds before I retired. I was a former shop steward, a chief steward, a local union president who never lost a grievance. It just seemed that the managers I had to face did not know how to read a contract. Going to go to my grave with the text of Title 5 USC. Keep on keeping on, guys. And thank you for that email. And we tossed up our hands into the air, too, when this happened.
Yeah.
But they were lied to. They were lied to by their senator. And he has no way to punish him for lying. There's no downside for him lying and saying, oh, you're going to get all these good things if you vote down the union. And now VW is saying, well, we're going to rethink new plants in the South after this, because
I have a quote here from Works Council. Remember, Works Council is a German ideal that is woven into their DNA about having workers represented at the management level.
Yeah, and I thought when I read these articles and they said VW official says, I thought, wait a minute, that's not right. This guy's a union guy. And then I realized, oh, no, he sits on the board of VW because he's on the Works Council.
Because they have
workers on the board of their company helping them organize work.
Because the Greatest Generation fought and died to make that happen.
Yeah, that's right. American people went over there and said, we're going to make sure you have what you had before the Nazis took over. Oh, well, we had these works councils. Okay, let's do that.
We're bringing them back.
Yeah.
But this is from Bernd Osterlaw. I can imagine fairly well that another VW factory in the United States, provided that one more should still be set up there, does not necessarily have to be assigned to the South again.
Yes.
Notice how he says the South as a block.
Specifically. Yes.
Not as a, this is a region. To the outside world, the South is a place. Mm-hmm. It's a place full of very, very angry, stupid,
belligerent. I found that fascinating that a foreigner, quote unquote, a foreigner, that someone representing a company outside the United States would recognize the South as a problem.
Yeah.
You know,
this is the
mentality of Southern senators and Southern anti-union as being a problem. Yeah. So, but of course, they've sold themselves that way for decades. This is why you should build your plant here, because we don't like unions.
Yeah, so we'll get rid of the labor. Don't worry. We'll cheapen it down. We'll make it third world, fourth world. Hell, you want fifth world? We'll give you that too.
Yeah.
But
the thing is, I will say, it's not just that, because the South is also significantly poorer than the rest of the country.
Yes,
it is. Those jobs that when the Mercedes plant was built in Alabama. I was living in Alabama at the time. Those were $17 an hour jobs, and that was huge money.
Yeah.
And there were people lining up around the building. And we've just gotten to the point where people line up around buildings to get lower wages than they could get in other parts of the country.
Uh-huh.
We just made it people desperate. You know, people were lining up here when they built a new Walmart, lining up around the building to get a Walmart job.
Well, and
let's just make the middle class so desperate for work that they'll do anything,
including turn on each other.
Yeah.
And then we win.
And then we win.
And that's the one thing about organized labor, as flawed as it has been, as mobbed up as much as it has been. At some point in the past, they got the idea that they had to fight for the rights of all workers.
That
some guy getting screwed. This is the speech out of The Grapes of Wrath.
Mm-hmm.
You know, wherever there's a guy who's being beaten up, I'll be there. It was that sense that we're all in this together, and we don't want a handout. We don't want to live off the dole. We want to work, but we want to work in a dignified way where we don't die on the job, where we work very hard and we make enough money to support our families. And we know that's possible because we look way up into the penthouse and we see people with private jets. Therefore, it must be possible to be in this company, in this system, and make enough money to at least afford a decent home and a decent life for your children.
You kind of sound like Joe the Plumber, Driftglass.
I do. Now that he's come to Jesus.
Now that he took a union job at Chrysler.
And let me say this. I was on the ground close up and personal when they were doing the Ford plant in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
The Ford supplier park in Chicago, which was all the little factories, all the little companies around the supplier park. That was a big deal. That was a big deal on the South Side. It was a big deal for jobs. They moved the highway. They remediated a whole bunch of land. They gave that company a shitload of money. They have one of the finest conference rooms that's never used in America. And there are people on the business side, on the owner side, who are absolute cheap labor capitalists.
Mm-hmm.
Who want to take everything they can get, screw you, maximize. There are also business owners who are responsible, thoughtful, decent people who care about their workers, predominantly because their workers are the people who make them money, who turn them a profit, who will help their workers go to school, who will help their workers go to college. I know people like this. I know them personally. There are unions. They're only interested in jamming up to get their raise for this quarter and then screw it. I don't care about anybody else. They are perfectly comfortable with discriminating against minorities. They're perfectly comfortable with people in their ranks who are unsavory. They're perfectly comfortable doing terrible things. Just like business owners, there are bad people in that ecosystem too. But there are also good unions. There are also unions who are thoughtful. There are people who understand that the way you beat Walmart is by raising all the prevailing wages.
Yeah, yeah.
The idea that you can have a varied ecosystem, an economy that has lots of different things going on, lots of vitality, lots of interactions, where everybody is sort of pulling in the same direction, they get that. When the businesses that understand this and believe in it and are committed to it, and the unions that are understand it and believe in it and are committed to it, and those parts of government and those parts of education, those parts of the not-for-profit sector, all of whom get this, get together, they can beat the people who don't get it, the people who do right. want to just gut the place, and it's IBG, YBG, I'll be gone, you'll be gone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They can win. They really can win, but they are fractured and disorganized and underfunded, and the people who are striving to drive us into third world status so we can have cheap labor, which is, by the way, a science fiction story, called The Day the Icicle Works Closed. Go look it up. You'll probably find only one reference to it on the internet on my blog. That's how inbred this all is. Yeah. But the people who want to break all labor and force everyone into a feudal model where there's just a bunch of poor, desperate people and a few people at the top, they have a lot of money. Mm-hmm. They have a ton of money, and they're perfectly willing to spend it for generations to win fight after fight after fight. We have to be able to match them with passion and votes and some amount of funding. Mm-hmm. We have to find a way to fund our fights. And I've said this before, we can't fight every battle on every front all the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, there for every blog post I write on, I don't know, manufacturing, there's a think tank out there. That's, and then I go on to something else because I'm over here, I'm over there. Every blogger I know is like that. Almost everyone is like that, all over the place. And that's fine to be interested in a whole variety of subjects. But eventually, you notice that you're basically firing three shots over here, two over there, and one over there. And coming at you are well-organized, well-funded tank battalions.
Yeah.
And we as a group have to figure out how to find the ones that are most important, that are most detrimental, and take them the fuck out.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'll get off my soapbox
now. No, good, good.
So, yeah, Newt Gingrich.
Newt Gingrich.
speaking of
climate change.
Speaking of never missing a meal.
You know, I love that ad he did with Nancy Pelosi where they were sitting on a park bench.
That never happened.
Promising to work together on climate change.
Yeah, yep. And that was in the late 50s, wasn't it?
No, I think it was just a few years ago.
That was 2008, 2009.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It was them on the park bench acknowledging climate change exists and promising to work together, despite their differences, to overcome this problem. Now, Newt was talking about, you know, private sector. And, you know, I'm sure he was sort of alluding to cap and trade and so forth. And that's one approach to doing that I don't happen to particularly agree with. But at least it's the conversation that we're having is this is a problem. It's a real problem. And we should do something about it. Flash forward 5 years. 6 years. Newt Gingrich on his Twitter stream denouncing John Kerry, K-E-R-R-E-Y,
mm-hmm.
as crazy for talking about climate change as some sort of destructive force in the world. And you know what he should do? He should resign. Because that's reckless and irresponsible to do that. Now, I, for one, will never be surprised at the depth to which a scumbag like Newt Gingrich will dive chase a buck.
Mm-hmm.
He is absolutely the worst.
And his wife probably has some video coming out.
I'm sure she does, or a book, or a documentary on Ronald Reagan. What Ronald Reagan really thought about climate change.
Yeah.
How America's future will be secured if only Newty does this or that or the other thing. I am absolutely never surprised. This is a guy, I remember back when he was still in office, was talking about how the only way to stop local, you know, crazy parents from murdering their children was to vote Republican.
Yeah.
Because liberals... This is the guy who created the GOPAC, the language system that he used to teach Republicans to say, always say Democrat Party, always say Democrats are traitors, always say Democrats are liars, and just taught them to repeat the lie over and over and over again, just as I assume Joseph Goebbels taught him, because it works really well. He's that guy. And for his sins, Newt Gingrich is absolutely free to do whatever he wants. He will never miss a meal. He has his own show on CNN. I'm sure once he loses that show, which he inevitably will, David Greger will bring him right back on the air and help refurbish his. And that's because they all live in the same gene pool.
Yep.
They don't live in flyover country. Newt Gingrich is one of them. So however shitty he is, however much he pees in the pool, They'll clean the pool out, they'll put fresh water in, and they'll invite him right back in because he doesn't live in flyover country. He's not one of us. He is one of them. And because he is, he will be eternally forgiven, shriven, and put right back into a clean suit and turn right around with money in his pocket to go do from Sheldon Adelson, probably, to go right back out and continue destroying this country until he's stopped. Until people make it clear in the heartland, make it clear that they would rather burn their television sets than ever see Newt Gingrich on it again.
And Newt Gingrich does have a new book out, by the way. It's,
yay!
I went to GingrichProductions.com,
yes,
where you can visit his store.
Yeah.
And Calista and Newt are available as part of the Worldwide Speakers Group if you'd like them to come and speak for you for money.
Yes.
But Breakout, his new book is called Breakout.
Yeah. Is it about acne?
It's about the future.
Is it his new acne treatment system?
No. He wants to escape the new normal.
Yes.
And has a vision for reorienting our politics. But he also says that John Kerry is engaging in bumper sticker science.
Yeah.
I think that's a little bit of projection.
Yeah. The only way I want Newt Gingrich and bumper sticker used in the same sentence is, and the last thing he saw before losing consciousness was a bumper sticker coming at him at 80 miles an hour.
No, I was just going to say stick a bumper sticker over his mouth.
No. But I'm sure, you know, again, this is...
to get violent here.
No, I'm sorry.
Can we talk about the party of Jefferson Davis, please?
Sure.
And roll this up because
sure.
You got to go.
I got to fly. I got to hop in the shower. I got to be on my way. As you know, Chris Matthews has coined a clever phrase.
he stole it from Driftglass.
He absolutely stole it from me. And other people too. But this is something that I went through my blog. I'm like, because Chris Matthews, who has a television show for some inexplicable reason, Chris Matthews, the guy who torpedoed Phil Donahue,
yeah,
who should still be on television, who should have his own television show, finally a couple of weeks ago, as we mentioned on this blog, just sort of mused aloud to himself, has the party of Lincoln finally become the party of Jefferson Davis?
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know,
I've heard this on this podcast. If you're a regular listener,
I should have trademarked it.
Say that many times
because it's been on my blog a million times. It's been on this podcast a million times, and it's great that the slow children are finally catching up with where bloggers have been forever. But it is absolutely true, and since they're now the party of Jefferson Davis, the Affordable Care Act is their Missouri compromise. It's the inauguration of Lincoln. It's the thing that drove them out of the Union. And that's why, if you understand sort of the language of that time, the language of this time, all of their language is couched in this final breach in the American compact where we have to leave now.
Yeah.
This is – the Affordable Care Act is – the Emancipation Proclamation. It is absolutely the end of their way of life.
Can we get back in the Union in time to repeal it?
Yeah. Can you let us back in long? No, shut up. You're not kidding.
And that is a nod to Lincoln, by the way.
It was a nod to the vice president of the Confederacy.
Right. Who said he wanted to be let back into the Union in time to let slavery be put back into the Constitution.
And Lincoln told him to go piss up a rope.
Yeah.
It was their peace proposal. No, we're not letting you back in just so you can undo everything.
You get nothing.
Good day to you, sir.
Good day to you, sir.
And that was the Alexander Stevens, I think his name was, the vice president of the Confederacy. But the ACA really has become this language of Northern imperialism. Them damn Yankees coming down telling us how to run our colors. I mean, how to ensure our people. Yeah, that's what I meant to say. And so they have their own peculiar institutions down in the South that we Northerners just shouldn't interfere with. And by the way, if you haven't read it yet, good people out in podcast land or blogosphere, go look up the Cornerstone speech.
Yeah.
That was – this guy wrote the definitive text on why slavery is a great institution, why it is a Christian institution, why it is a noble institution, why doing this to African Americans is the Christian and noble thing to do, why people who oppose us are unchristian and uncivilized, and how future generations will look back and say what we did was a glorious and good thing. It wasn't the original thought, but he really codified that Southern mentality, that the Bible wants white men to rule the world. And that anyone who stands against that theory is also against God. And that manifested itself in Jim Crow. It manifested itself in Loving versus Virginia. It's manifesting itself in gay rights. That is in their fucking DNA.
Yep.
And until we burn it out of there, it's going to be there forever. It can be a nuisance as long as we don't take those people seriously, as long as they're not pandered to, as long as they're left to sort of perish by natural selection. Mm-hmm. But as long as one party keeps shoveling manure on top of that shit and say, yeah, you're right, that's brilliant. The federal government is out to kill you and take away your way of life. They're going to keep coming at us, and they're going to keep coming at us with money and with bared teeth and with no brains at all. So, yeah, here's the...
And as long as Newt Gingrich then gets to do color commentary on actual network television.
Yeah. They're never going to go away. They can be gradually weeded out just, again, by natural selection. This country does not – our country is trying to reject this organ. Mm-hmm. It really is. Mm-hmm. And there are just some people who desperately want to get rid of the federal government for their own political, plutocratic reasons, mm-hmm. who find these people useful tools. Mm-hmm. And they keep funding them. They keep giving them money. They keep giving them credibility. And that's – understandable. What is unforgivable, I mean, I think it's awful, but I can comprehend why that's happening. What is unforgivable is when people like David Gregory keep handing them half of the stage.
Yeah.
Keep treating them as if they're equally credible to someone who isn't a lunatic. So we now turn to the great state of Arkansas again.
I just wanted to add to that, to what you were saying about Loving versus Virginia, because you added that in there.
Yeah.
There is a documentary that came out in 2009, and I watched it last week, called The Loving Story. And it is a beautiful documentary. It's actually on YouTube. So I wanted people to know about that. Mildred and Richard Loving.
Yeah.
He's white and has a crew cut and looks like a redneck. And she was half African-American and half Indian. And the story, they were married.
Yep.
They were in love and married and had children. And Virginia, in Virginia, where they lived, it was illegal for them to be married and have children.
Yes, illegal.
And
in your lifetime.
Illegal. They could go to jail for doing this. And as you said, it's a good thing for them that he was white and she was black, because if it had been the other way around, he would have just been hung.
Right.
Yeah, been dead. But the side stories in this documentary, where they go and do man on the street interviews, and it is always, God made us this way.
Exactly.
And therefore, we don't have to join together. You know, there shouldn't be men, black women and white men getting married, because God made us separate.
Yeah.
That's the argument. That was the argument that was made by the judge.
Right.
In Virginia.
That's why it was called Loving versus Virginia.
And you get to see the attorneys who wound up taking this to the Supreme Court, where it became a 9-0 decision in favor of Mildred and Richard Loving being allowed to live as a married couple in their home state of Virginia. That was all they wanted.
That's all they wanted.
You realize that when they are interviewed. All Mildred Loving wanted was to live near her parents. That's it.
That's all she wanted.
But her husband and children.
But if you read the Loving decision, and I quoted the
decision that was made
by the court.
Decision by the court in
Virginia. Yeah. It's God in his wisdom has separated the races.
Yep. And it was the most racist document. And the attorneys say, oh, he handed us such a lovely gift.
He did. He did. Because he put into words.
Yeah. Yeah.
He actually wrote down out loud what everyone was thinking.
Yeah.
And codified it into law. And so when you look at all of the efforts to roll back voters' rights for those people, all the efforts to say that I'm desperately clawing, trying to stay back in the 18th century.
Yeah.
Because we don't want gay people. I want to be able to have the right to discriminate against someone because I'm a Christian.
Right.
I want that written into law.
And this is my country.
Uh-huh. Do you know how incredibly harsh the judgment of history is going to be on your cause? But it's if they can't give it up. So but that Bible back, that God has laid the mantle of his, and it's always a guy, of his protection. This is what God wants us to do. This is the food pyramid. White guys at the top, everybody else underneath. And anything that disrupts or upends that system is heresy, is a blasphemy against God. And once you start looking at politics, American politics currently, through that lens, you start seeing it everywhere. It's like centrism. Once you start listening for people who apologize for the right by always saying liberals are worse or Democrats are just as terrible, you start to see it everywhere. And you realize how much into the groundwater this poison has gotten.
Yeah. And how hard. And when you realize that religion is there to make me and my people comfortable.
Yes.
And that's it.
Period.
God is there to make, to not challenge anything that makes my life pleasant and comfortable and content.
And so the
everything else, anything that goes against my way of seeing the world and my people being in charge is against God.
And so the
you'll hear it all the time. Once you start to listen for that, you'll hear it all the time.
It's everywhere. It's either text or subtext. It's out on the streets in Russia. In this country, we have to bury a little bit, but it's there. And so we return now to the great state of Arkansas, where they have this rule requiring reauthorization when it comes to Medicare expansion that requires a supermajority. It requires 75% of the House to vote to reauthorize it. Now, Arkansas was given a lot of flexibility. They were given one of the first waivers to experiment because they didn't want to take that filthy northern money. So they got what's called a private option for expanding Medicare for the poor. This is the alternative for Republican leaning states.
Right.
They
and
were
the
allowed
alternative
to.
Was that wasn't the alternative that they were allowed to take that Medicaid money and instead of setting up Medicaid, they could buy private insurance for poor
they
people.
Could just buy private insurance with it. We're not going to, you know, tell you how to run your state. We're going to give you some money.
You have to cover everybody.
But you have to cover people, right?
Yeah.
And so that's a budget item. It has to be reauthorized every year.
This is my understanding. They did have to follow the federal guidelines in terms of income to cover the people who are below the income level where they're eligible for subsidies.
Yeah.
So I have noticed that when I've tried to go back on the website and see if we can buy insurance because we've been waiting so long for Medicaid.
Uh-huh.
The exchanges when you put in, if you put in our income, honestly, won't let you go to the exchanges and look at, you know, what you might get because they don't want to pay. We are a budget item for Medicaid, not for the subsidies.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying?
Exactly. We are supposed to be over this pile.
We are not allowed to get a subsidy because that money is saved for people who are richer than we are.
Yeah. Well,
we're supposed to get Medicaid.
And who need to be bumped into that. So, it's a mess is what it is. But it's a mess because we tried to
couldn't go to single payer.
Right. It's a mess because we didn't do it right. Because we had to have this compromise, this Missouri compromise. Mm-hmm. Because the crazy people, socialism, oh my God, So we're now, you know, one of the few Western democracies that is trying to do this nutty system.
Yeah.
And piled on top of that are a bunch of Southern states for whom it's still not private-y enough. Yeah. It still has Barack Obama's, you know, fingerprints on it. So just give us the cash, we'll figure it out. So they were given the cash. They said they could figure it out, but you have to pass reauthorizations with a supermajority, and they can't quite get there. There's a small group of people who are holding out against it.
Won't for anything that's got Barack Obama's anything on it. Right.
And now I'm going to quote Majority Leader Bruce Westerman.
Guess which party?
I will read it in my best Beauregard Southern voice. You will forgive me. This is not my natural habitat. Very, very cold up here in the north. It is. I'm a hothouse flower, and I do not belong up in the frigid north with all you Yankee scum. So now I'm going to go to the quote. In Arkansas, is Arkansas going to be an enabler for Obamacare and the Washington, D.C. interests who seek to impose their will upon us? Or are we going to hold the line on behalf of the people of Arkansas in opposition to this dreadful law? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Fuck you. You don't want to insure poor people because a black guy's giving you money to do it.
Yep.
And that checks off two boxes. You get to screw poor people and you get to say screw you to a black guy. So it's win-win for, and by the way, this article was in American Al Jazeera, so I just think that's perfect. It was other places.
Sharia newspaper.
Yeah, it really is. So, and you can understand why these people are losing their mind. Everywhere they look, their world is changing in the direction that the basic foundational documents of America insisted that it change. You know, this is what the genius of Martin Luther King was. All he wanted to do was hold America to account for the things we had said. You said we were all equal, and now I'm going to ask you to cash that check. You said there would be no discrimination. You said, and now I'm going to ask you to honor your own words. That's why conservatives, frankly, hate liberals. It's because we keep bringing the goddamn past up. We keep asking them
to live up to their own standards.
To live up to their own standards.
It's so bad that people who hate the gays now love Russia.
Yeah.
So
because freedom, you know. Blah,
what?
The punchline. And so we bring ourselves back around to, if you'd like to go back to it, the big new Republican rebranding plan.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
which looks remarkably like the old rebranding plan.
It's old wine in old bottles, baby. Yeah,
it's old wine, baby.
And so, wine.
So Frank Luntz, of course, is at the heart of this. And the new branding, the big new branding, they're going to give up completely on doing anything big, yeah, like immigration reform or tax reform or health care, because bipartisan deals are probably dead in the water for the rest of this Congress. Mm-hmm. Because one side killed it. That's the part you never hear. Yeah, all you hear about Washington dysfunction. Yeah. You don't hear about the fact that this is the decision of one party, mm-hmm, to kill these things. Because they think it's in their long term, even though some of them know it's just suicidal to do that. They also know that the mob with their torches and pitchforks are a lot closer to their tender asses than some undetermined future date when retribution will come. So it's like an alcoholic, you know. It's I'm not dead yet.
No,
there's still
one
liquor.
One more drink isn't going to kill me, right?
Hey, I think this perfume has alcohol in it. I'll just drink this. Mm-hmm. And until they really hit bottom, until they're swarmed by the mob, they're going to keep pandering to them. And so, according to Frank Luntz, the big new rebranding thing is going to be on healthcare. Republicans will offer their own wholesale substitute for the Affordable Care Act in the spring or summer, making a full repeal of the law a keystone of their election year message. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, repealing Obamacare, mm-hmm, is here to stay. Mm-hmm. They're not giving up. That's all they have, because they can't talk about immigration. They can't talk about anything having to do with civil rights. They can't talk about taxes. They can't talk about income inequality. They can't talk about the deficit without having someone remind them that, remember back in 2000 when you ran against having a surplus? Because, you know, granted, only assholes in the flyover country would do that, but we would do that. So the only thing they have that they can talk about is Benghazi and Acorn, which doesn't exist anymore, and the Missouri Compromise, that awful Affordable Care Act that's going to come down here and tell us how to handle our Negroes. I mean, poor people. And that's all they, that's literally all they have. So that is what you're going to see, according to Frank Luntz, who should know because he helped build this pigsty.
He sure did.
That's what we're looking forward to in the future.
Before we close, Driftglass,
yeah,
I wanted to mention two letters that came via email, just in passing, because I don't want to reveal anything about the people that wrote them.
Right.
But someone wrote to us saying that in part the podcast had helped save his life, that he had felt very down, and the podcast and a bunch of other interventions had really helped him climb out of a depression. And we're very grateful to hear that.
Yes.
And thank you. And I know personally what that is like from postpartum depression. And it's good to get help, and we're glad that you're getting it. Your life is worth it. Yes. Trust me, yes, it is.
All life is worth it, frankly.
All life is worth it. Yep. And I will tell you from my own personal experience that it's not about being sad. It's about being hopeless. And when you get to that point of being hopeless, do seek help, because people care. The second letter came from a woman who wanted to point out to us, I was mentioning in a past podcast about a number of married people in our church who may or may not be gay, but are living a straight life. And this woman wrote to us, and the first thing she said that just made me feel wonderful was that she considers us family, and that's a wonderful thing to hear. But she wanted to remind us that this revolution that we're going through with gay rights and gay marriage and people who are deciding to come out of their straight marriage and become honest about who they are, that does leave behind a straight person who walked into that marriage honestly wanting to be in a straight marriage and caring about the person they were with. And she had been with her husband since high school, and he came out and was, you know, that they got a divorce and he's living with a man now and so forth. And the thing is that I'm not going to get into detail, but he was a jerk about it. That doesn't happen with everyone, but he was a real jerk about it. Mm-hmm. And when it gets to the point where your own children are telling you, Mom, please get a divorce from this guy because he is lying to everybody, including himself, and treating you like dirt and you deserve better. You know, it's time to do that. And when you have children with someone and then you decide that you're on your own journey.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of it gets to the point where you have to be be a mensch also, in addition to trying to find a way to be honest with yourself and others. And apparently there are support groups for straight spouses of gay people, and I'm glad that she's found that and so forth. But, and I don't want to defend Michelle Bachmann too much.
No. Or at all, frankly.
Yeah, yeah, there are some people who are just living the lie deliberately.
Well, I have no idea. I am nowhere near smart enough. I'm very smart, and I'm nowhere near smart enough to figure out all the rules by which people should negotiate their own
to get into other people's marriage
conditions.
No, even Michelle Bachmann's marriage, I don't want to get into it.
I have no problem with line marriages. I have no problem with group marriages. I have no problem with any arrangement. I am the slippery slope. I have no problem with consenting adults deciding how they want to organize their lives at all. None of my goddamn – I'm very libertarian in that regard. It's none of my business. Mm-hmm. None of my business. As long as everyone's consenting and no one is under compulsion, organize your marriage or marriages or your plurals or your arrangements outside of marriage any way you like. But when it goes wrong, and they do go wrong from time to time. You and I are both, you know, second marriage.
Yeah.
If you want to be treated like a grown-up during the time when you're organizing your family, mm-hmm. and then please, for God's sakes, act like a grown-up when you're trying to take it apart.
Yep.
And that means being considerate of the person you used to love, mm-hmm. probably still do for some reason or on some level in some way. And I know it's horrible because that break releases a tremendous amount of energy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. A lot of potential energy is converted into kinetic hatred.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard to have a decent divorce.
Yeah.
So please separate the side of why you got the divorce, mm-hmm. and the fact that your spouse is a jerk, because mm-hmm. that second one is just what makes it awful, no matter what your situation is.
Particularly when children are involved, that is when
just the worst. Yeah.
Society, uh-huh. And you and I talk a lot about society. There's a lot of conservatives in this country who don't believe that there is such a thing as society. But when children are involved in a marriage and that marriage is dissolved, society has a case to be made for protecting those children.
Yes.
From all of your anger, frankly.
Yep.
So. Keep it to yourself,
yeah.
if you can.
Yeah.
Let me just say, we love our listeners. We do. When I say we love hearing from you, I mean it. So feel free to write us.
She means it. I love hearing from everybody. I'm a terrible correspondent. I've gotten worse over the last 6 years or so.
But I do love,
we read everything. I read every comment. I read every letter. I'm touched and delighted and happy. And I believe all of you, frankly, here's my problem. Can I tell you my problem?
Sure.
Just between us?
Mm-hmm.
I think everybody who writes me, even though it's just a note or it's a $5 donation, God bless you or whatever it is, deserves a full, well-composed, drift glass thank you note.
And will not do a form letter to anybody.
I know.
You don't believe in them.
And the typewriter looks heavier and heavier to me every day. And I post because I think they're owed. I think those people are owed a thank you that's more than just a cursory thank you. And that starts, even though it shouldn't, it feels like a writing assignment.
Yeah, well.
And I postpone it because I wish
I could get you to forgive yourself and lower your standards just a little bit.
Yeah, well, eventually I do. Eventually my guilt overruns my sense of ridiculously outsized obligation. But we do read everything, and we're incredibly appreciative of every note we get, and even the ones that chide us. We get a lot of critical comments,
mm-hmm.
and some of them are insane, but I mean, are what I learned today was called crop dusting, which is where you walk past someone and fart at them.
Oh!
So some of my comments are...
Which one of the children taught you that?
Nobody. Somebody in my comment section taught me that. I think it was Hal Sparks, frankly.
Right. Do not teach the children that.
No. So congratulations, everybody. Learned a new word today. Learned a new definition today. So, but other than those that are just, you're a monster and I hate you because you blah, blah, something. We get lots of critiques, mm-hmm. which are very well thought out and make us think. And even if we don't reach a different conclusion, we appreciate those too. So thank you very much.
Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty or two sent in by you, the listeners. And this week we have two. This week's internet kitties, Driftglass, are from space.
Space? Those are the best kitties.
Yes. They were on a handmade birthday card and the picture we got, Manatees and Murphy each have their own flying saucer. How cool is that? So, space kitties, welcome to the Internet Kitty universe. You can send your Internet Kitty or more to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com. where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service, Go Postal Unions, letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. So, Driftglass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties say a Lannister always pays the writer.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whine and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2014, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
Boy, do I have a science fiction university for you.
Well, hell. And I need to take my vitamins, and so do you.
Oh, okay.
Well, but after the podcast.
We're going to podcast the hell out of this thing vitamin-free.
Exactly. Not coffee-free.
Not coffee-free. All right. Someone on Goodreads has written a Robert Heinlein quiz.
Okay, good.
And it's multiple choice, but hell no, not for you it isn't.
I wrote the quiz.
You did not.
The calls are coming from inside the science fiction university. Yeah.
All right. And we're in a lightning round this one. Let's see how fast you can get these.
Fire away.
Number one, what does the A stand for in Heinlein's name?
Anson.
Question two, what branch of the military did Robert Heinlein serve in?
U.S. Navy.
Question three, what year did Heinlein publish his first short story?
1939.
Correct. Question four, not counting posthumous awards, how many Hugo Awards did Heinlein win in his lifetime?
Six.
Four.
Four, okay.
Question five, Heinlein also won science fiction's Nebula Award. How many?
Three.
One. Question six, what publisher published most of Heinlein's juvenile novels?
John Campbell.
No. It was either, I'll give you this multiple choice, Bantam, Scribner's, Doubleday, or McGraw-Hill?
I don't know.
Scribner's. Uh-huh. Number seven. Which of the books listed below was not written by Robert Heinlein? I'm beginning to think we did this one before.
I don't think we did.
Okay. Yeah. Double Star, Starman Jones, Time for the Stars, or The Stars Are Ours?
The fourth one.
No. That's correct. The Stars Are Ours is not written by Robert Heinlein. Question eight.
It's written by Anson MacDonald.
Oh,
that was his pseudonym, by the way. So
you know it wasn't.
Yeah.
Anson MacDonald.
Yeah,
is one of his Robert Heinlein's pseudonym.
One of them for a
but
while.
He still didn't write The Stars Are Ours.
No, he didn't. But for a while there, Campbell's magazine was about half Heinlein, and he wrote.
He just had to write different names.
So it wouldn't just be all him. Yeah.
Question eight: which Heinlein bestseller added the word "grok" to the vocabulary of many science fiction fans?
It's on the tip of my tongue.
G-R-O-K.
Yeah, I know the thing. It's Valentine Michael Smith, The Man from Mars. It's not I Will Fear No Evil. Stranger in a Strange Land. I don't know why it was so
hard. That's correct. Question nine. What do Red Planet and Stranger in a Strange Land have in common?
I believe they have Martians.
That's right. They're both set on Mars.
Yeah.
Number 10. Last and last question.
Uh-huh.
Which was the last book Heinlein published before his death?
It wasn't Grumbles from the Grave. That was the maybe The Cat Who Walked Through Walls.
No, that was one of the options.
Yeah.
The other options are Friday, I Will Fear No Evil, and To Sail Beyond the Sunset.
To Sail Beyond the Sunset.
That's correct. All right, you did very well on that one.
Yeah.
You are a Heinlein expert.
I do know my Heinlein.
You know your Heinlein.
I never poured for him at a science fiction convention. But that was before my time, but I know people who did.
Yes, you do.
And he was a very impressive dude. I mean, he had some of his ideas were nuts. There was this science fiction convention where he famously predicted that there would be nuclear war in your lifetime.
Wow.
And Spider Robinson said, yeah, the old man, he's crazy. You know, he's a little militant and stuff. Spider Robinson was a huge Robert Heinlein fan.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, but when there was a thunderstorm that night and lightning struck near the hotel,
yeah,
everybody thought, here it comes. So, yeah, I read him when you're supposed to read him, when I was 13.
Mm-hmm.
So very influential genre-making mm-hmm. writer. So, yeah.